This is Phoenix FM.
That is your theme tune, Roy. Do you like it?
Oh, it's very nice. Just for me, is it?
It was just for you. Now, I'm joined in the studio by a retired CID murder squad detective, Roy Tyzak, who is here today. This is the second time, because we were doing a show, then we had a bit of a break, and you came back about 6 weeks ago, and we were talking a recent, a murder case that wasn't that long ago, actually, that you were
We did indeed, a Colchester job, wasn't
it? Which was absolutely fascinating. Now, today, Roy Tyzak's Crime Time, you're talking about the history of the court system.
Yes, now, please don't all switch off in your droves or curl up on the settee and go to sleep, because hopefully it's not going to be quite that boring. I thought that this week, as it's so close to Christmas, rather than talk about some grisly crime and get everybody depressed, excuse me, I must apologise for my voice. I've had a cold and my voice is going a bit strange today, so you have to bear with me. We're going to be talking, I say not gruesome, there are some pretty gruesome things that used to happen back in the 12th century. that's how far back we're going today.
I knew you wouldn't disappoint me, Roy.
That's even before you started here at Phoenix FM. And what they used to do then, they used to have trial by ordeal and trial by combat. If you were caught doing something wrong, stealing a neighbour's sheep or whatever, you were likely to be punished by having to carry a red-hot piece of metal over a distance, or perhaps putting your hand into a cauldron of boiling water to retrieve a stone. What would then happen is that after 3 weeks, they would examine your hands or your feet or whatever, and if you had healed or began to heal in 3 weeks, they would decide that was God's will and you must be innocent. However, if your hand was falling off and had all festered and was horrible, then you were obviously evil, so you must have been guilty of the crime. And that's how we used to carry on in the 12th century. Another punishment, also there was walking on hot stones over a distance. And then there was the cold water treatment. Now, lots of people have heard about witches being thrown into the water, but in fact, it wasn't just for witchcraft. It was for a whole range of offences. And as you probably remember, if you floated, then you were in fact innocent. Sorry, I've got that wrong. If you floated, you were guilty. If you sank, you were innocent. But the problem was that they used to tie your left thumb to your right big toe and your right thumb to your left big toe. So when you were thrown in, it was very difficult to sink, and you're more likely to float, which is why so many people were found guilty, because they floated. However, apparently, towards the end of the 12th century, there were 50 men who were accused of stealing the king's cattle. And for some unknown reason, they managed to sink. And so the king decided this was not a foolproof system, so it was abolished. Unfortunately, history doesn't tell us how many of the innocent people who sank were actually fished out again afterwards. So you may actually have been innocent, but then drowned, which is not a very nice way to go. The other way of dealing with matters was trial by combat. Now, we've seen this on some of the old films with the knights fighting. And, of course, the beauty of this system is that if you had to settle something by trial by combat, you didn't have to do it yourself. You would appoint your own champion. And he would go and fight on your behalf. And it was actually a fight to the death. So whoever was alive at the end was seen to be the innocent party, and the guilty one was dead.
I reckon they could bring that back, actually, the way things are going at the moment.
In one or two places they have, I think. It goes on. I've seen it in Brentwood High Street late on a Friday night. I'm sure that must be trial by combat. Something's going on. Of course, in this time, certainly after 1066, it was the king who had the power to decide mainly who was guilty and who was innocent. And it wasn't until about 1154, when Henry II came to the throne, that he devised a jury of 12 local knights, which is where we get now, get the 12 good men and true. And they used to then settle the disputes over mainly over land. And in 1116, Henry appointed judges to travel the country to the assizes. Now, the assizes is just another word for court sittings. Mm-hmm. And this is quite interesting because these judges were given their own circuit to travel around the country on, which is where we now get the expression of the circuit judge. They used to travel to various towns where they will settle the cases. You may see it on these old things, old television programs, where the assizes come to the town. So you don't have a set-up courtroom, but once a quarter, the judge would come to the town and try all the cases. And what they did then, the laws were actually made in Westminster. So these judges would take that law to the town and try them under Westminster laws. This did away with lots of the local laws that were set up. Mm-hmm. And it became a law that was common to everybody, which is where we get the expression of common law from.
Yeah.
And that was a much, much better system because everybody knew what the law would be. We then move on to 1215, which everybody knows, I'm sure, was the signing of the Magna Carta. You knew that, didn't you?
Right, I know that Scott Ross was actually there on that day.
I thought he was, actually, yeah. I thought I saw him there. Yeah, this was the signing of the Magna Carta. And this basically was when the noblemen decided that the king shouldn't have the final say in everything, because up to this point the king would decide who was guilty and who wasn't. And this was a document that said that any freeman, and a freeman was anybody who was not a serf or a slave, any freeman could not be punished except through the law of the land. And this was very important, not only to this country, because it was the time of the colonization of the USA. So a lot of our laws were then taken over to America, and that's why our system of law was very similar to the American system, because it was taken across. If we then move on to the first professional judges and magistrates, in 1217, somebody called Martin de Patershall, who was the Archdeacon of Norfolk, became the very first professional judge. And by the 13th century, knights began to join the bench as well. Although up till then, it was mainly religious people that were the judges. The very first professional advocates were chosen from what they called the Order of the Sergeants at Law, and gradually they were replaced by solicitors and barristers, which is now where the judges are selected from today.
Yeah.
They gradually go up the ladder, and they start off as solicitors, they then become barristers, and it's from the barristers that we then choose the judges. The first magistrates' courts appeared in this country in 1285 in the reign of Edward I. And what he then did was select what he called good and lawful men who were appointed to keep the king's peace,
yeah,
which is now where we get the expression the justice of the peace.
Yeah.
And these were just ordinary members of the public who were seen to be law-abiding and upstanding citizens, and they would then become the justice of the peace, and that's when the magistrates' court started. In this country, of course, we have the magistrates' courts. We also have the county courts, which deal with the civil matters. Mm-hmm. That's where you may go if somebody owes you money or a dispute over land, etc. There are different divisions of that. There's the families court and the divorce courts, where we go for deciding children's maintenance and for getting divorce papers. Mm. Then, as I say, we come on to the magistrates' court. The thing with the magistrates' court, they can only deal with relatively minor offences, and they can only give punishments of up to 6 months imprisonment or a £5,000 fine.
Mm.
To give you an idea of how many they deal with, currently they're dealing with 1.5 to 2 million cases every year. Oh. So people sometimes get annoyed if they have to go to court and they say, well, why is it taking so long? You know, yeah, it's a simple matter. But when you think they've got nearly 2 million to get through and not enough courts. You then move on to the Crown Courts. The Crown Courts would deal with the more serious offences, such as robbery, rape, murder, etc. And they, at the moment, are handling, believe it or not, over 100,000 cases every year. And on top of that, there's a further 40,000 are sent to the Crown Courts for sentencing because the Magistrates Court can't give a sentence that's high enough. So again, people often criticise the court system for being too slow. But when you look at the numbers involved, you can understand why.
Right, we're going to come back. Just going to do a quick bit of travel. You're listening to the lovely Roy... Say lovely. He is lovely. Roy Tyzak, but he is ex-CID... Say, always say ex, is retired CID murder squad detective. I love saying that. I'm going to get that right one day when I say that, Roy.
Could still be lovely and be a retired policeman, you know.
My friend's actually going out with a guy that works on the drug squad at the moment. She says,
right.
Yeah, he's lovely. She's very happy.
Good.
There we go. Right, 11:40, we'll be back with Roy just after the travel. All right, still joining me in the studio is, I will say, the lovely Roy Tyzak, who is a retired CID murder squad detective, and also you do, you're a Toastmaster as well, and you do loads of stuff to do with music too.
I don't know what else I do. I get confused. I don't know when I get up in the morning, what am I doing today? What am I?
Penelope, what is he doing?
Yes, I'm very, very involved with music these days, running my club, The Stand and Deliver, which is now at the Royal British Legion Club in Loughton. By the way, whether you've plugged it or not, I'm not sure, but Matthew Shepherd will be at the Hermit Club on January the 3rd.
Oh, excellent.
Friday, January the 3rd, so all the kids should get down there. I think there's an age limit. I don't think you can go in there if you're above 17.
I should get in okay then.
Oh, we can get in. We can
Scott
get
Ross,
it.
Maybe not. If you haven't heard of Matthew Shepherd, he has been on my show before, and he was at Brentwood Lighting Up. But if you go back and you have a look through the Eat My Brunch shows from this year, you will actually get to hear him singing in the studio and also from Brentwood Lighting Up as well.
Excellent. Good. Right, coming back to the boring stuff. I hope it's not boring
it's
for
not
anybody.
Boring, is it? Very interesting.
Good. Well, especially at Christmas. I mean, we're sitting here in your studio and festively decorated. I must say, the Christmas decorations are fantastic. It's actually one half-eaten mince pie hanging from the bare light bulb in the middle of the room. It's absolutely fantastic.
Thank you.
It's a lovely studio with three floors underground and a dungeon here. But it's very nice.
Be careful, the boss is sitting next door.
Oh, I won't tell him I'm sitting on an orange crate.
No.
It's a beautiful room, actually. Very, very nicely decorated. We're going to talk about the Old Bailey. Mm. Now, some people think, they look at the Old Bailey and they think it's a fairly modern building. Well, in fact, there is a new extension on it. But it was first built, believe it or not, in 1674.
Wow.
And it was a part of Newgate Prison, and it's very convenient to take the prisoners straight from the prison into the court. It has been rebuilt over the years, and strangely enough, the courtrooms have basically stayed the same. Before electric lighting, what they used to do is have a large mirror over the dock so that the sunlight or the light that came in from the windows used to reflect down onto the prisoners' faces so the judges could see them.
Yeah.
Which I think is an important thing because I've always found, having interviewed hundreds of people over the years involved in crimes, it's very, very important to watch their face and see their reactions to certain questions.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is why the debate rages about whether or not people should be allowed to wear burqas and things in a courtroom.
Yeah.
And my firm opinion is no, because I think it's absolutely essential to see people's reactions, to see their eyes, to see mouth movements and this sort of thing.
I didn't really know that. I know there was lots of stuff recently, but I thought if it was a court, then you would have to go in and your face would have to be seen. I didn't know that it was completely...
It's still a debate that's going on at the moment.
Who would know if that's the person? Somebody must check if they are wearing a full kind of the burqa. Somebody must check them before they actually go on the witness stand. Is that part of the thing? Or
oh yeah, but if they are a witness, of course they get less scrutiny than for example the accused. Obviously we need to make sure it's the right person in the dock and they haven't switched with somebody else.
Yeah.
But for a witness, if they protest on religious grounds that they must wear this burqa, it does become a very contentious and very problematic thing to deal with, but it is so important because the face can tell so much.
Yeah.
Some people more than others, some will immediately give away a secret in their face. Others are more stonewall if they're very good at poker, for example. Hence the expression poker face. So that's what they did. They had this mirror over the top of it that reflected the light onto it so that the judge mainly could see their faces. It's had a very interesting history, the Old Bailey, as you can imagine. I've been there a few times, and I must say that if ever you get a day off work and you want to see something really interesting, don't sit in front of your television watching fiction.
Yep.
Just get yourself on a train, go up to central London, go into the Old Bailey. You'll be searched when you go in, but anybody is allowed in there. Go upstairs and you'll see the most incredible building. There is this most incredible gallery. It's a bit like going into the Sistine Chapel.
Mm.
And that sounds like an exaggeration, but if you look online, look at some photos, you'll see that it is quite true. Most amazing friezes and paintings on the ceilings. And you can then have a look at the lists and select which court you want to go into, and you can sit in the public gallery and just watch and listen. You can go into court one if you can get in. It's very popular to get into the public gallery. I've been in there, and I must admit, while we was waiting for our trial to start, I did go and stand in the dock, and it was quite an eerie feeling, because you're standing in the dock where, you know, Dr. Crippen was.
Mm.
The Crays have been in there, Acid Bath Haig, the Yorkshire Ripper, all these notorious criminals throughout the centuries have been standing in that very dock.
Mm.
and it's a strange feeling. Very imposing courtroom, court one. In 1750, they had something called jail fever, which was actually typhus. They just ripped through the Old Bailey and the prison within a month, and it actually killed 60 people, which included two judges and the Lord Mayor of London.
Mm-hmm.
So they after that, they started putting these what they called the nosegays everywhere. People going in with those sort of big beaks on their noses.
Yeah.
Which is not where we get the beak from in the court, I don't believe. They used to have to pay to go into the public gallery, and in 1771 they scrapped that idea, but then it caused a riot because so many people wanted to go in when it became free.
Mm.
That there was literally this riot outside of people trying to get in there. Now, you'll all have seen the statue on top of the Old Bailey, and it's actually called the Lady of Justice is the official name of the statue. It's on the dome, which is actually 67 feet high, the
yep.
dome on the top. And the statue itself is 12 foot high, covered in gold leaf. She has a sword in one hand and the scales of justice in the other. And as you go into the building, you'll see written above the door, it says, "Defend the children of the poor and punish the wrongdoer." And That's basically the slogan of the Old Bailey.
Mm.
The current building was actually opened in 1907 after being rebuilt. So that's the Old Bailey, but get yourself along there if you get any opportunity, because it is fascinating. Just moving on to the early 1700s, along comes somebody called Henry Fielding. He was an author. He actually wrote Tom Jones. That's Tom Jones the novel, not Tom Jones the judge on the voice.
Yes, sorry.
And he was actually a magistrate at Bow Street in the City of London, along with his brother John. And before that, they only had what they call thief takers, who would solve petty crime locally for a fee. But Henry Fielding then formed what is really known as the first police force, which were the Bow Street Runners, called Bow Street because that's where they operated from. They didn't patrol the streets, but they used to be paid to go out and execute warrants and writs and then bring the criminals back for trial. And they used to travel countrywide doing this. And what they used to carry, what's called a tipstaff, which is like a small club with a crown emblem on the end, which was their basically their badge of office. The tipstaff is still carried on to this day. If you look at any police officer from commander rank upwards, on his shoulder he will have a laurel leaf with a cross, what they call crossed tipstaves, which is like the two tipstaffs crossed. He was succeeded after he died by his brother John Fielding, who became blind, but he was so good at his job and his memory was so good that he could remember criminals just by their voices when they came into the courtroom, and he'd been became known as the Blind Beak of Bow Street. That was John Fielding.
Excellent.
And that really brings us sort of up to date to the formation of the Metropolitan Police in 1829. They were formed by Robert Peel, who was actually the Home Secretary.
Yeah.
They mainly because they were worried about the use of the military on the streets. They couldn't really trust the soldiers to keep order properly, as they could tend to be a little bit over the top, as possibly they could be today, if you imagine them, mobs of soldiers roaming around the streets trying to keep peace. I hate to think what would happen, and that's no disrespect to our soldiers, who do an absolutely brilliant job. They decided that they would wear blue because the soldiers' tunics were red and they didn't want to be associated with that, so that's why they first started wearing blue. And they used to carry a wooden truncheon and a rattle, and that was it. They weren't armed. Fun enough, going, the Bow Street runners were armed. They used to carry, as well as their tipstaff, they would have a cutlass, but the Bow Street runners weren't armed, and that's all they used to carry. And the tipstaff, the rattle was literally what became the policeman's whistle. And I actually have to say that I had a whistle when I first joined, long since gone now, but you had this whistle on a chain, and you're supposed to blow it three times in the direction of the nearest constable. That's supposed to help running through the streets. To, you know, how they're going to hear a whistle, I don't know. But then I was also given a key to the police boxes, to the TARDIS. When we joined, you're given all your, what they call your appointments, which is your notebook and truncheon and everything else, plus your whistle and the key to the police box. Never used a police box, unfortunately. I have looked inside one of them in my day, and they're not as big as a TARDIS. They haven't got all that stuff inside, and there's no Doctor Who or
if
anything.
Only.
It's just a telephone and a little shelf to write on. But it was just being phased out, really, in my day. They still use them in the City of London, but in the Met, they'd more or less phased them out. So that basically is, sort of brings us up to date with the criminal justice system and the police service. Obviously, it's a great deal more complicated than that. There were so many changes throughout the years, for good and bad, but that's basically how it started. So we've gone from the trial by ordeal of making people dip their hands into vats of boiling water, up to giving them a £50 fine in the local magistrate's court. I think I know which I'd prefer, quite frankly.
And you can join Roy and his boiling pot of oil after Christmas. Just bring your criminals along to Phoenix FM. We'll sort them out for you right here. What plans have you got for Christmas? What are you up to at Christmas?
We are very much home lovers at Christmas. So we'll be in our little cottage, and which Penelope, my wife, has decorated in most fantastic style. It looks lovely in there.
Hello, Penelope.
Hi.
So there'll just be Penelope and I, the dog Bertie, the cat Rupert, and the chickens.
And the dead fish.
And the dead fish. I'm sorry, Penelope. Penelope's just been down to her parents, and I was tasked with looking after the chickens and the dog and the pot plants, and but unfortunately the fish died.
Oh dear.
Yeah, all well, I thought there's only three. Apparently there were six.
Oh God.
I can only find three dead fish in there.
Oh dear.
I don't know what happened. That Tuesday night they're all swimming about quite happily, playing as they do. And Wednesday morning, it was like a massacre. There's all these sideways fish floating. Oh, so I don't know what's happened.
If Penelope weren't there, it might be because they missed you. It could be. That happens sometimes when you go away.
That's what it is.
Fish die
of broken hearts.
Happened to my friend. He went away for a couple of days, made sure they were fed, came back, and they'd gone.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for that. That's got me off the hook.
Or Roy's been scaring the fish. That's the other thing. Making faces.
I think it was a mass suicide. I think they're one of these cult fish, you know. And they've all had this mass suicide plan for months, and they just had to wait until I was on my own with them.
There we go. So you'll be back in the new year with more Roy Tysak's Crime Time.
Love to, yes indeed.
And don't forget Matthew Shepherd, who is a very talented young man that you look after.
Yep.
He'll be doing his gig on the 3rd of January at the Hermit Club.
That's it.
And it's under, I think Hermit Club is under 16, under 16s.
Is it under 16s?
Something like that, yeah. I don't think it'll be very much to get in. It might possibly be free, but if not, it'd be a couple of pounds. Something like that.
And Matthew will be dishing out some signed photographs if anybody would like them. So let's see people coming down there in their droves.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Happy Christmas to both of you. Happy Christmas,
and to
Penelope.
You.
I'm the one waving for. And you too, Roy. Have a fantastic Christmas and a great new year.
Cheers.
Right, 11:57. Let's finish with some Hurts with Stay. I'll be back after 12.
My whole life waiting for the right time to tell you how I feel, and though I try.